For over 50 years, the Star Trek franchise has arguably been the gold standard in science fiction, offering fans an optimistic vision of the future, where the problems that plague us today have long since been put behind us. Growing from a canceled television series to multimedia cultural institution with no end in sight, Star Trek has not only impacted the lives of fans around the world, but helped to mold them, guide them, and sometimes even save them. These are the stories of those fans. This is their prime direction. And as I realize at this moment that I really should start writing a script for these intros, it is episode 3 of The Prime Direction on the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. Thank you, everyone, for joining us once again here in the ward room as I welcome one of the most positive, optimistic, always smiling Star Trek fans that I've ever seen on Twitter. I'm so glad she could be here, especially to come back again, as this is our second attempt at recording this. When technical difficulties foiled us 2 days ago, we're back again to give it another try. We have, from Twitter, the 23-year-old Trekkie herself, Allie Martinez. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing super well. I'm glad that we could get back together to foil these technical difficulties and prove that this episode needs to get out.
We will not let them stop us.
Yeah, of course not.
We are undeterred. We are podcasters. We know that this is the sort of thing that happens usually every other episode.
Yes. Well, we'll just tell technology no. We'll say no. It's going to happen.
We say not today. Oh, sorry. That's for the Game of Thrones podcast. I wish I had a clever title for what the Game of Thrones version of this show would be, but I don't have it right now. So instead of trying to come up with a funny Game of Thrones title, I will simply ask you to give the listeners a bit of an introduction about yourself. Tell them who you are. What do you do? What do you like? Where are you from? Who are you, Allie Martinez?
I feel like I'm under so much scrutiny. So I am the 23-year-old Trekkie, as most people know me by. I chose that name because I knew that no one else would probably go by it. So it would be something a little bit creative that people could remember me by. And I do Star Trek podcasting. I blog. I do cosplay. I go to conventions. I just in general really enjoy being a part of the Star Trek online community and also just the Star Trek community in general. So that is something that that's really important to me and something that I used to think as very much of like a pastime, but now it's become very prominent, and being able to interact and engage with a bunch of people over social media and seeing them at conventions has become, you know, one of the most exciting parts of my life. So I definitely can thank Star Trek for that. But in regards to just a few things about me, I am currently living in San Diego, California. I don't have to worry about shoveling snow. I'm originally a Wisconsinite, so I was very much used to sub-zero temperatures and ice and, you know, feet of snow on the ground. So I am not complaining in the least. But I am actually very eminently moving to Japan, which is also another very exciting move, and being able to just experience a totally different culture. I've never traveled abroad. I've only ever been to Canada. So I am just like completely thrilled. But there's a lot of things to do in an international move. So everyone keeps asking, you know, what are you going to do when you get there? And what are all the places you want to visit? And I'm just like, can we just get there first? Can we just like be there and then we'll get there? So
you're literally going to be living there. I think you'll have time to handle the rest of the stuff, what you're going to see, where you're going to go.
Yeah, I just want all of our stuff to get there and all of us to get there safe. So that's just like my primary worry right now. But In regards to kind of like what I do outside of Star Trek related things, I work in social media marketing. So that's probably why you see me on social media so much, because along with it being a great, you know, subsidy to Star Trek, it's also my job to be on social media and to help other people promote themselves via social media. So that's probably why I'm very active, or one of the reasons I'm very active. But also, I like to keep myself busy. I like to be outside. I like to go hiking and just, you know, spend time with my dog, who never runs out of energy. So that's something that is definitely tricky. But other than that, you know, I really just like kind of exercising creativity with writing and reading, and I used to be quite a crafter. Since then, not so much. You know, while I was in college, and then I was moving, and then, you know, being in a totally new place, it just like totally opens you up to all these different opportunities. So maybe someday I'll come back to that. But I'm just, in general, I've enjoy pop culture as a whole, whether I'm talking about it, blogging about it, whether I'm out watching it. It's pretty much dominates all of my conversations with anyone and everyone. And I don't know if that annoys anyone, but Star Trek seems to be something that comes up in almost every conversation that I have.
Well, I don't think you're going to find that it annoys anyone on this network. It sounds like, just from that introduction, even if I put aside everything that I already know about you, just from what you said in that introduction, we could make a very strong case to make you a regular co-host of the Cosmic Potato, of Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, which is the flagship podcast of this network, which is basically all pop culture all the time.
Ooh, well, that sounds like a really fun thing to, if not regular co-host, at least to be a part of in some way.
Well, you can join in anytime. I guarantee that contact the head of the network. I will give him your name. If you say, hey, can I be on a show? He's going to say, when do you want to come out?
Well, I would be honored. Thank you.
It's how we are. This is how we do things. And we still have not, okay, a little behind the scenes for you podcast listeners, some inside baseball. We still have not gotten around to recording our review of What We Left Behind, the Deep Space Nine documentary film.
Ooh.
We all saw it. Everyone that's going to be partaking in the discussion all saw it through the Fathom events at our local cinema.
Mm-hmm.
But every attempt to record the review for that show has been foiled by one person or another being unavailable for legitimate reasons, but, you know, a last minute scheduling falling through, and boom, we can't do the review. So it has to get put off. So maybe you can sneak into that one if you time it just right.
Oh, that'd be awesome. And if not being able to host, that's something I want to listen to. It's something that I really haven't had. There was like discussion about it over Twitter, but I went by myself. My husband has not seen Deep Space Nine yet, so I didn't really want to spoil any of it for him. And my parents are avid Star Trek fans, but didn't get a chance to see it. So I'm like, well, who do I talk about this with? So I'm just taken to social media to hear reactions and thoughts about it.
Mm-hmm. I cannot remember the last Blu-ray that I bought physically. I have, let's just say, other means of getting my TV and movies. But that documentary I will be getting on Blu-ray when it comes out. I need all the extra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I need everything that's in there.
Yeah.
I also need them to make a sequel and then to turn it into a trilogy of documentaries.
Yes.
Because even at feature length, while watching that documentary, it seemed like there was so much that they still could have covered.
Yeah.
That movie went by so fast. I didn't want it to be over.
Yeah. Sitting there, I was like, it's done? No, it can't be done yet.
I know, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, yeah. And I actually was really, really happy that the theater that I went to see it in, I wasn't particularly expecting a bunch of people to be there, because I had been to a few Fathom events that featured like NASA documentaries, and there was one where I was the only person in the theater, which is kind of fun, but then I'm like, oh, like no one else is going to see it. So I wasn't sure what to expect with my theater, and it was about 75% full, and there were a lot of, like, I was had the chance to interact with a lot of Star Trek fans that, like, in my the city that I'm living in, which I had never met before. So it was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. We were at about 50 to 75% capacity at our theater, which surprised me a bit. I expected it to be a little bit more sparse, but sure enough, there were plenty of people there to catch it. Mm-hmm. And as I look back on it, I'm like, oh, that was a potential for a whole lot of networking with Star Trek fans, and I could talk with people, maybe get some people who want to come on the podcast. That'd be great. Didn't talk to a single person.
Well, I feel like I am the type of person in a movie theater that just is like there to go and see my movie and then like talk about it like afterwards on the car ride home. I can't say mm-hmm. I'm particularly a very talkative person. Like, I don't like it when people talk during the movies, obviously. But I feel like that's me. I feel like I go in, I sit down, I watch it, and I get up and I leave, and then I like talk to someone about it later.
Of all the movies that I go to see with my wife, usually there might be, you know, a few whispered comments here or there. We're always considerate of other people. We're very, very quiet. But we might trade a comment or two during the thing. During that documentary, she knew better. She didn't say a word.
Oh.
As I'm looking at the screen, my eyes just not blinking. We see that first bit of high def footage of the Defiant flying through a battle, mm-hmm. and my eyes start welling up. I'm like, "That's so pretty."
Yeah, I was like crying, and the person next to me was like, "Are you okay?"
How can you be here at this movie and not understand?
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Everyone should be weeping when this person talks or when that person says this thing or Terry Farrell is giving an emotional recounting of what it was like to leave the show. Come on, you have to cry.
Mm-hmm. Like, man, what are you, a brick wall? I was just like, the whole time I was just like, like all these reactions to it. And there were a few other people around me that were kind of like that too. But there was this one person that was sitting a few seats down from me that I wasn't being in any way like loud or distracting, but when like there were scenes where I definitely like I teared up and he kept looking over at me and I was like, I'm not crazy. I just really like this show.
This will be my last comment on the documentary. Then we'll actually, you know, start the podcast. But I did find myself anytime that they had Armin Shimerman in an interview portion where he's answering questions. There were two people in the documentary that really got a strong reaction from me. And the first was Mark Alaimo, because, mm-hmm. oh my God, does he not sound like Gul Dukat when he's talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had no idea how much he was affecting his voice when he was playing Gul Dukat. Mm-hmm. Holy cow. So that really threw me off. But I'm glad to finally really know how to say his last name. Mm-hmm. And Colm Meaney's first name.
Yes.
I'm now saying it right because I've been saying it wrong for like 30 years. But the other was when Armin Shimerman was on screen, anytime he spoke and was answering questions, I couldn't help it. I noticed that this grin is just stretching across my face because it's Armin Shimerman in an interview setting, and I have been on the other side of it because mm-hmm. last year, which I don't know if you have known about this or heard about it, but last year I got a chance to get on Skype with Armin for an hour and a half.
That's incredible. That's amazing.
And just had a one-on-one interview with him because I had, for people who don't listen to Cosmic Potato, you might not know this story. So I'll give you a quick recap. I was able to call out Armin Shimerman on Twitter by saying that his performance in the season 3 finale of The West Wing was outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Also, and most, one of my favorite shows.
Most people would say he wasn't on The West Wing. I'll be like, ah, but indeed he was for one episode, the season 3 finale. You didn't hear him say a word. You never saw him in close up. The only time you see him is a wide shot of a Shakespearean theater company performing a production on stage. Mm-hmm. And it's a wide shot of that stage, and Armin Shimerman was right there in the middle because the production staff for the West Wing had hired a group of actors to rehearse a portion of a Shakespeare production with the intention of putting some of that production in the episode. Now, by the time the episode was edited, none of their performance actually was used in the episode. But the people that they hired for it were still seen on the screen, and his name still showed up in the opening credits because he's technically in there. Mm-hmm. So I call this out on Twitter. He's my favorite part of the episode. I love the series. And he saw it, and he responded to it, and he said, "I defy you to find me in that episode."
That's awesome.
So I replied with a screenshot of it where I had circled him because I know exactly where he is. As far as franchises, Star Trek is my favorite. As far as individual television series, West Wing is my favorite television show. Mm-hmm. I've seen it many, many times. I did 3 full rewatches of the series, all 7 seasons, just last year.
That's incredible.
I've seen it a lot. I played in the background and just listened to it. The dialogue is like music. So I put up that screenshot and I circle Armin Shimerman and I say, "Challenge accepted. There you are. What do I win?" It was essentially like, I'm paraphrasing, but he challenged me. He defied me to find him, and I did it.
And there you go.
I followed it up by saying, "Now that I found you, does that mean that I get to interview you for a podcast?" And he said, "You know what? You accepted the challenge and you rose to it with grace. So the least I can do is say, yes, we'll do it." And within a couple weeks, we had a date set up and he called me. don't tell anyone. I still have his cell phone number in my phone.
That's such an awesome story, though, to be able to share. That's incredible.
So if Armin ever calls, I'll know it's him because it's going to show up on my phone. And we did the interview, 90 minutes, some great stories. He was a wonderful, wonderful guest, so personable and gracious. It never for a moment seemed like a chore. Like, you know what, I painted myself into this corner. I guess I just have to endure it. No, he was all in. He was there for it. And it was a great time. And I got to hear a story about Seinfeld that does not paint the show in a positive light. If you want to hear more about that, go find that episode of the Cosmic Potato Podcast, September of 2018.
Yeah, go listen to it, everybody.
All right, now that we've gotten through all that, we're going to start the actual questions for you.
Okay, Allie I'm Martinez. Ready. Let's go.
And for these questions, we're going to start at the beginning. We're going to travel back in time. I would like to know, I already know the answer because we talked about this 2 days ago, but I would like the listeners to know, what is your earliest memory of Star Trek?
All right. So while I grew up with Star Trek being a constant presence in my life, I really had to think back to what is like the most solid Star Trek memory, the furthest back that I can think. Because I know like already that I had been watching reruns of TNG and TOS and stuff like that. But then I'm like, okay, well, what's the first thing I really remember? And honestly, the first vivid memory is probably back from when Broken Bow premiered with Enterprise. And at that time, I probably would have been about 6. I believe I would have been 6 years old. And Star Trek is a family trait for my family. My parents were both, or still are both, very avid Star Trek fans. They don't really speak out about it as much as I do, but they still enjoy talking about it. And so as a family, growing up, we would always sit down and watch Star Trek. And so then when Enterprise was in syndication, it was a weekly thing that we did. We sat down and we had dinner and we watched Star Trek. So those are memories that I will never trade for anything. That's why I feel like Star Trek is so important to me, because it was also, you know, very, it was like family time was what Star Trek was for me. So mm-hmm. I still very much get very nostalgic when I watch Star Trek, because there's episodes where I say, oh, I remember watch it. Like, I remember seeing this episode and I remember what we talked about, like what my family mentioned and what we were doing when we watched this episode. So even though I don't live with my parents anymore and I'm on the other end of the country and soon to be on the other side of the world, every week when Discovery was premiering, I would still call my dad, and my mom too, and we would sit and we would chat about it. So we still, even today, even though I'm not there anymore, still have that kind of family connection about Star Trek.
That is, I think, honestly, something that most of the listeners are going to be able to relate to. I know while you were giving that answer, all I was thinking about was watching episodes of The Next Generation as they premiered, you know, new episodes as they were airing. Myself, my brother, our parents, all watching them. And the reaction of everyone in the room when Riker stares at the view screen, looking at Locutus of Borg dead in the face, mm-hmm. and tells Mr. Worf to fire. And then they hit the credits and all of us lost our minds.
Best of both worlds. I just watched that episode.
And then, in addition to that, before the days of Netflix compiling all the episodes together and letting you binge watch them whenever you wanted, we had our own low-tech version of binge watching, which was a collection of about, I'd say, a minimum 36 VHS tapes.
That's awesome.
And while, and not that we bought, no. This is when the episodes were being aired in syndication five mm-hmm. times a week of Next Generation. We would throw in that tape and we would tape the episode that was on, and then it goes on the shelf, and then we pull that tape out again the next night and we tape it again. And we had just about the entirety of Next Generation on those VHS tapes. Oh, I'd say episodes wow. that we were missing, I could count on one hand the number of episodes that we were missing. And that would be a very common thing. Is, you know, it's the weekend. I don't have to go to school. I wasn't the biggest fan of going outside to play, but I was an artist even back then. I would do a lot of sketching. So I'd break out a sketchbook. I'd get at the dining room table. We had a small TV in there. So I'd throw in a Star Trek tape and Star Trek would be playing. I'd be sketching or just watching it in the living room just for no reason. It's a Sunday afternoon. The door is open. The screen door is there and sunlight coming through. There are some episodes, even now when I watch them, it still makes me think, sunlight through the front door, on the carpet, green trees outside, mm-hmm. Sunday afternoon.
It's so interesting how we kind of coordinate that, like such vivid memories with when we remember watching episodes of Star Trek. That's how you mm-hmm. know that Star Trek is really ingrained in your life. And I, while all of my other friends were, I liked as a kid, you know, doing stuff outside and doing a variety of different activities and sports and stuff like that. But I can remember, I found this a while ago because my mom was going through some old, like she's very sentimental. So she keeps a lot of older things. And she sent me a picture that from probably my grade school days. And it was like a side-by-side image of, I had a project at school of creating a Venn diagram when we were learning about Venn diagrams of just like, okay, well, pick two like different things and compare them in a Venn diagram. And my two things that I had chosen were Star Trek and Doctor Who is what I had compared. And mm-hmm. Then side by side with that, it was a letter for my nanny who said, or it said that you can only let Allie watch one Star Trek episode. Otherwise, you have to do something else. So I was just like, man, all those like really, really fun memories of growing up with Star Trek.
So it sounds like there are plenty of things that connect us with Star Trek and our early Star Trek viewings to the extent that we have sense memories that come back to us anytime we watch a particular episode. But as far as initial connections, what was it that first hooked into you when you were watching Star Trek? A part of me assumes that it was the family event that it was when you started watching, but maybe it was something else. And did it start right away on your first viewing, or did it have to grow on you a little bit before it really got its claws in you, to give it a bit of an ominous descriptor?
I think that really as a child, it's hard because some of those, you know, the diversity and morality principles are hard for kind of a child to wrap up at that age. So I do agree with what you said in that it was partially just because it was a family event that we all sat down. But Also, I think it was because it was so different than anything else that I feel like I was watching at that age. Growing up, I was exposed to a lot of different science fiction. So, you know, Doctor Who and Babylon 5 and Lost in Space. And so it wasn't like I wasn't getting any sci-fi. But I just think that Star Trek has such a special, like, spark to it. And even, you know, while some people are not the biggest fans of Enterprise, and I'll say that there's definitely some pitfalls. But I think there's definitely pitfalls in every series. So I just had never really, I felt kind of like it was an instant connection, but it was a connection that grew more over time. Because at first it was just like, well, we're sitting down and we're watching the show, and it's something that I like that we can all spend time together, and it's interesting, and, you know, cool stuff is happening on the screen. But as I got older, it really became, you know, the principles that Star Trek is teaching me, whether we were watching, whatever, TNG or Voyager or et cetera, the principles that I learned kind of growing up by watching Star Trek really still stick with me today. And I think that they really taught me how to be a better person. And the characters that I had a chance to kind of grow up with were great role models and kind of helped me become a little bit more confident in myself, and then in turn confident in my fandom. So I would not take it back for the world. I know a lot of people are, I have a lot of friends that they're not hating on Star Trek, because I don't know that I would be friends with them if they were really Star Trek haters, but they don't really, I've exposed them to episodes or certain series, and I always have that, like, I sit and wait, and I sit next to them and wait for their reaction because I want to know what they think. And then it's bound to happen, but obviously not everyone's reactions to certain things are what yours are. And of course you want people to like what you like, but that's not the world, you know?
Right.
So, I find it very interesting because in turn, though, you know, everyone has that thing, that show or that, music artist or any other, you know, plethora of creative work that they connect with. So Star Trek just happens to be mine. So I do think that I am very fortunate to have grown up with Star Trek because it made me a better person. And now, every year that I get older, I feel like I just connect more and more. And going back and watching these episodes, while they're nostalgic and sentimental to me, it's also, it kind of mirrors how I've grown up. Because I mentioned this recently in kind of a chat that I did on Twitter of, you know, the way we view episodes change over time because we're all in different points in our lives, right? So when I watched, you know, an episode when I was younger, I might not have had the same reaction that I had now. So currently I'm doing an original series rewatch. I'm doing it definitely for enjoyment, but also for some podcast research. And it's been quite a while since I've rewatched TOS. And I find now that I'm connecting a lot more with certain episodes than I did before. And same with, I'm also concurrently doing a rewatch of Voyager. And I not that I hated Voyager first run, but I wouldn't say it was my favorite first run or the first time that I had seen it. And now going back through, I think it's because, you know, I'm at this point in my life where having a strong female figure like Janeway, not that that was never not important before, because it always was. But I'm at this point in my life where her leadership and the way that she holds herself is someone that I aspire to be. So I find I connect more with it now than I did before. So there's just so many, like, just beautiful intricacies about growing up with Star Trek and having it evolve in your life over time.
Absolutely. I did a rewatch of Deep Space Nine, and it had been, you know, a couple of years since the last time I did. I do rewatches more frequently in the past, say, like, you know, 4 or 5 years or so. But for a while, they would be fairly rare. You know, I'd come back to them, when I had some time and when I felt the itch. And I did a DS9 rewatch at some point after I had gotten married, and along with this marriage, I became a stepfather. And I mean, I love this little man. He is here with us 1 week, and then the next week he's with his biological father, and then we, you know, swap back and forth. Mm-hmm. So he's got a parent and a step parent at each house, but over time we've gotten really close. This guy is awesome. Aww. I can't get him interested in Star Trek, which is a shame because he's a Star Wars kid. He's definitely big into Star Wars, but I lucked out and I got him to watch the first episode of the first season of the Doctor Who relaunch with Christopher Eccleston. And the first thing he said when it was done was, "Can we watch another one?" And I said, "No, yeah, we don't have time, but we'll watch more." And he has recently started the run of the 11th Doctor.
Okay, Matt Smith, yeah.
Yeah, he is just powering through this series. He is loving Doctor Who. Can't get him into Star Trek, but that's okay. I still love him. And I love him so much that when I did a rewatch of Deep Space Nine, after, you know, getting to know him while I was dating his mother, and then the engagement, we got married, and our relationship has grown closer, and then I got to the episode, The Visitor.
Oh quite boy. A tug on the heartstrings.
I always felt it to be a very emotional episode, and it definitely hit the right notes for me emotionally. But then I watched it not as just a Star Trek fan, but as, you know, to some degree, not in the traditional sense, but as a parent, as a father. Oh, that episode took me apart. Because that's how you grow with Star Trek. That's how things change over time as you're watching the episodes that you thought you understood before, and then you watch them again later and you realize, oh, Code of Honor is horrible.
Mm-hmm. There's just so many. It all really depends on what's kind of happening in our lives. And I think that that's sometimes why it is so important that all of us kind of came to Star Trek at a certain time. Because not all of us grew up with this. Some of us came to it, you know, later in life. And while that's not necessarily true for me, I think that there is, like, whether it's an episode or a series or a moment in Star Trek that is really quite poignant for all of us. And so I always kind of like chatting about those moments. And like you said with the previous question about, like, well, what connects you with Star Trek? So if I were to say my moment of my most poignant memory or moment of watching Star Trek, while it is, you know, while it was Enterprise and it was watching Broken Boat with my parents, and that might not, like, okay, maybe the episode wasn't that great or maybe you didn't like it. I think it was fine as a season opener or as a series opener. But like, that is my most poignant Star Trek. Like, that is what I associate my fandom with. And everyone's like, well, why? Like, that's kind of like a weird moment. And I'm like, it's because Star Trek is a family trait. And that is the memory that I associate with that family trait. But that's so cool that you had such a special connection to The Visitor, coming back to it later.
It was a revelation to me, I'll tell you that much. I was not expecting it.
Well, sometimes those unexpected moments are the most meaningful.
Yeah, exactly. You had also said in your previous answer, we were talking about how watching Star Trek at a young age and growing up with it helps to shape who we are. I think, you know, we can safely say that people who grew up watching Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones are not going to have the same outlook on life in general as those who watched a lot of Star Trek when they were growing up. And that's going to inform and color how we all express ourselves in a variety of ways. One of the ways that I want to focus on is expressing our particular fandom. Now, just from watching your Twitter feed, it becomes fairly apparent that you have no problem expressing your Trek fandom, considering how many different Star Trek costumes that you have that you will show off on Twitter just to show your love of Star Trek. You got number one, you got Ensign Roe, you know, various other uniforms, even down to just, you know, I'm wearing a comm badge today. Something very simple. When it comes to expressing your fandom, I would think that an accurate descriptor would be proud. You are proud to express your fandom out loud. Has it always been that way? Or did you hold your Star Trek fandom, you know, kind of, did you hide that light under a bushel Were you shy about expressing your fandom and it grew to be something you were proud of? Or have you always been fearless about wearing your Trek fandom on your sleeve?
Oh, that's such a great question. I honestly, it kind of goes back to growing up. I was really the only one of my friends that, I mean, before like social media age, we're talking, but I was really the only person kind of in my circle besides my family that was watching Star Trek at that time. So when I was younger, I didn't, other than like family outlet, I didn't really have a bunch of other people to talk about Star Trek with, unless it was like my grandparents, which is also a great conversation. But it was hard kind of growing up, and all my friends would be talking about, you know, a different show, which I mean, I still followed mainstream at that time, mainstream pop culture, but it wasn't, you know, something that I inherently find myself, you know, going back to like, this is such a great memory of pop culture. Like the first thing I think of is Star Trek in regards to pop culture that's been relevant throughout my entire life. Mm-hmm. But I, in the fact that none of my friends really understood what I was talking about, or what the heck I was trying to get across, they, I mean, my friends were great growing up. So there was never any like dissuasion as to, well, why are you watching Star Trek? It was always just like, they would sit there and like politely nod, and I would, you know, go on for an extended amount of time about something I had seen in a Star Trek episode. And at the end of it, they kind of looked at me with blank faces. So, not their fault. But so I inherently started looking for other outlets in which I could express that, because it was something that I had always felt was important to talk about. You know, Star Trek is such a powerhouse in all of these moral and diverse issues. And as I was growing up, I started having more of an understanding of what those meant to both to me and both to society. So it was, I like, as a person, I'm always eager to share what I think about things. So whether I was talking to a professor or anything like that, I actually once in high school did a research paper about Star Trek, about the kind of influences of Star Trek technology on modern technology. And upon handing it in, my teacher was like, how, like, you know what Star Trek is? And I had like made all these very specific references. And she was like, how do you know all of this? And I was like, it, like, Star Trek's just my thing. It just is. And it always has been. So I was always proud about it, but never, it got to the point where, you know, the people that I was interacting with didn't really understand what I was saying. So I kind of backed off a little because I didn't want to bore them. And then, you know, there were points in, you know, in high school and in middle school where, you know, just the kind of bullying that you receive growing up where like you're a nerd and all that stuff. And, it was something that I never really like, I kind of embraced it at that point where I was like, you know what? I like this thing. So I don't really care at this point. It, had been such like a constant presence where I couldn't imagine like me ever not having it or me ever not being passionate about it. So it was mm-hmm. just like, well, it is what it is. And I think it was just more so that I didn't have the opportunity to share those thoughts as much as I wanted to. So I don't know that I could, you know, associate that so much with me being shy about my fandom, but I think it was more of, not that I was like a closeted Star Trek fan, but that no one around me really understood what that meant.
Right. So you were proud about it and outgoing about it to the extent that your circumstances would allow.
Yeah. I feel like that's a good way to describe it. But I mean, upon especially the social media age, and then also when kind of in my high school days and then graduating high school, I really became involved in going to conventions. And it just kind of opened up a whole new world to me. So the first convention I ever went to was in 2014, and it was Wizard World Chicago. It's kind of like a mainstream pop culture convention, has lots of different, you know, content in regards to that. But
I remember the magazine that it spawned from.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And so One of my friends had seen it or seen an ad for it and was like, hey, do you want to go to this? And my dad does some work in Chicago. So I was like, well, maybe I can just like spend some time in Chicago and then go to this convention. And so that like walking into the convention hall, I went by myself. I'm pretty much like, I've gone to conventions with a few people, but I'm kind of a solo con goer because I kind of like being able to just do my own thing and go wherever. But I had no idea what that meant. I had a Star Trek TNG jumpsuit at that time, and I kind of really argued with myself over wearing it because, you know, if you've never been to a convention before, you have no idea what to expect, and you have no idea, you know, the enormity of what you receive when you walk in. So I was like, I don't know if I should wear it. And then I did. I was just like, well, you know, I'm here. I might as well. And then everyone else was wearing costumes too. And just being able to be, to step kind of into that different world. Because conventions really are. Like, it's quite a whirlwind. As much as, like, say you get a 3-day weekend pass for something like that, it still feels like it goes by in a heartbeat. So, yeah.
The last convention that I went, the last actual Star Trek convention that I went to, this is a bit of a point of shame for me, was before the premiere of DS9.
Oh, wow.
And I remember this because the guest, this was back in the days when conventions were a little bit smaller. You would have like, you know, one major guest that would make an appearance and, you know, do like a keynote on the stage. But that was about it. It was a fairly small scale. And for that convention, we had George Takei, who got up on stage and he's on the microphone. And he's, you know, talking about, you know, whatever it was he was talking about. I don't remember it, except for him announcing that they were working on a new Star Trek series called, I'm going to see if I can do it, called Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
That was good.
It's exactly how he said it. And just to hear the title, oh, exciting. Mm-hmm. And that was when he told us about one of the characters that was going to be on this show who came from a zero-gravity planet and needed a wheelchair to get around everywhere, which may sound strange. I know a lot of people are probably already aware of this, but that is not a regular character from Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. She showed up for one episode, and that episode was, of course, her name, which is Melora. And I think that there are some people who are not aware of the fact that the character of Melora Paslar was meant to be a series regular. So next time you go back and watch that episode, just keep in mind she was going to be in every single one.
Wow.
I don't know who we would have not had in the cast if they had made her a regular. I don't know you know, who replaced that character in the cast, but as far as he knew, that was going to be a regular character. So at that convention, I got to hear George Takei, and I got to get up to the table, and I got his autograph, and I was too scared to say anything to him, and that was it. I think maybe the following year I went to one other convention, and Colm Meaney was the main guest. Mm-hmm. And that one, I look back on it with a little bit of awkwardness because we're standing in like the main lobby area. There's not a whole lot going on in the area that we're standing. And there's my father, who brought myself and my brother. And I don't know where my brother is. He's off somewhere else. And I feel my dad tap me on the shoulder because I'm so short and he was very tall. I'm very tall now. I'm taller than he is. But back then he was reaching down to tap my shoulder. I look up at him, and he points off in a particular direction. I follow his finger, and there's Chief O'Brien standing at a table talking with one of the, like, convention reception people.
That's so exciting.
obviously, he had just arrived, and he was checking in to say, okay, where do I go? So I looked at my dad, like, what do I do? And he's like, you want to go up to him? Because, you know, my dad doesn't care. It's like, hey, you're out in the open. You're fair game, buddy. So I walk up to Colm Meaney and I can't say anything, and he looks down just like, you know, waiting for me to say something, and I kind of hold up this Star Trek audiobook on cassette tape that I had.
Oh my gosh.
And I think I weakly asked if I could get an autograph, and he looks at me and says, do you have a pen?
Oh, that is so, oh, that's such a great memory.
Instant panic. I'm like, I don't have a pen. So I just, but he could see the blank look on my face of not knowing how to say no. So he turns to a lady and says, do we have one of those permanent markers that, yeah, thank you. Okay. So he gets it and he signs my thing. I still have it over on the other side of my office. I have that cassette tape with the autograph on it.
Aww.
And, then we got to hear him, speak at the front and it was great. And I don't remember a whole lot of people in costumes, but these days costumes are just the norm. That's just, you know, what most people do. They will show up in a costume, whether it's from a character that you recognize or one of the favorite costumes that I've ever seen a picture of online is a woman dressed up as the Kai, mm-hmm. modeled after Kai Winn. So, the cut of the outfit and the headpiece, it's all the same, but it's all in black and yellow, and she is Cobra Kai Winn.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that a while ago. It was, like, rotating on social media.
Yep. I love that.
That's fun. To be able to kind of do that cross, like, hey, we're going to cross fandoms and put this together.
Exactly. With the Photoshop project I'm doing now, I actually do some crossovers. I'm making comm badges for all the divisions of Starfleet that we know about, like command, operations, sciences, and then I'm making several dozen more from divisions that you've never heard of, but now you wish they were real.
Ooh.
To give listeners a sneak peek, you're going to see the photography division, the civil liberties division, the family planning division, and there are going to be a couple that I like to call fandom relations division.
Ooh,
and those
great.
Those combat. Imagine someone designed a little badge in the same shape as our standard DS9 era comm badges, but with the visual aesthetic of whatever fandom it's talking about.
Ooh.
So crossing over some visual styles, I wanted to have some fun with that. So I have five or six examples. So people who are following this project on Twitter, you can find it at Planet Rise is the Twitter account I use for my art, and that's where this is going through. The Prime Direction and my personal Twitter account will be retweeting all of them, I'm sure. But you'll get to see what would it look like if Doctor Who had his own Starfleet comm badge.
Oh, and if you haven't already checked it out, make sure to do so. And I actually hadn't heard of this venture, and now I am quite curious. So I'm going to go check it out after we're done recording.
At the time of recording, there are three divisions that have been released. The three basic ones, gold, red, blue. And I released a bonus one last week because Trek Tuesday last week, as of this recording, was the 37th anniversary of the release of The Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a bonus post for that movie that I put up. And tomorrow, as we're recording, tomorrow is Tuesday, Trek Tuesday, so there will be another one. So keep your eyes open for that one. I'm not even going to spoil what it is.
Oh, well, I'll be looking out for it.
I know this is only the third episode of this podcast that I have hosted, but this is definitely the first time that I've had to, on the fly, while we were recording, cut questions out of my list, because I know we're not going to have time for them all, because these are some outstanding answers that you're giving, so in-depth, I love it.
Oh, thanks. That or I just talk too much.
It's not a drag. It's not babbling. It's not talking too much. Maybe I'm talking too much.
Affirmative.
Because, I'm having you on as a guest so we can hear about you. Maybe I'm talking too much. But
oh, no.
Answers that are so in-depth that I know I have to cut questions or else it's either that or we have to make a two-part episode. But neither you nor I have the time today to record that much. So got to cut it down.
All right.
This makes me happy. This puts a smile on my face. The next question that I have on the list deals with droughts in Trek on television. And to be honest and direct, you are too young to have experienced the first Trek drought, which was between TOS and TNG. But there was a drought between Enterprise and Discovery.
Yes.
So my question to you is, with Enterprise being your introductory series to Star Trek, when Enterprise ended, did it feel like something was missing for you? Did you fear that Trek would never return to television? Or were you able to avoid those feelings and those fears because you had such a backstock of Trek to go back and explore for the first time that it got you through that lean period until Discovery came out?
Yeah, that's a great question. After Enterprise ended, I know that kind of towards the end of Enterprise, and then it not being renewed for another season, was kind of surprising. And so I feel like a lot of us felt pretty let down. And obviously there were a lot of kind of open-ended story arc things that we were like, okay, wait, what? Huh? So after Enterprise ended, like I said, I had been watching Star Trek for quite some time. So I had been watching reruns, but had never seen it in its entirety. And I feel like my primary motivation after Enterprise ended was to know everything and have seen everything that there was to see about Star Trek from the very beginning. And I mean, I already was familiar with characters, like with TNG, with Captain Picard, with Voyager, with DS9, stuff like that. But to be able to kind of go back and do that, quote unquote, like binge watch of everything. And then when kind of the emergence of Netflix occurred, that made things a lot easier to binge watch. We had been renting Star Trek from like the local, well, at that time it was still Blockbuster. Oh my goodness. And then for some time, this wasn't until later, but I actually ended up working at a video store for like about 4 years. So
Which one?
It's called Family Video.
They're still around.
Yes, they still exist. And
there's still a Family Video here in my town. I worked at Hollywood Video before they went under, and my wife worked at Blockbuster.
Wow.
So we were the competition for a while because we're old school.
Yeah, totally. And we, you know, it was something then that kind of, although we had spent a lot of family time watching Star Trek, it was something that became quite a personal venture for me because I, you know, with trying to absorb all of what Star Trek had been since the 1960s, it's not something that you can do overnight. And especially if you're binge watching, it's also something that, while I don't regret kind of my binge watch, I feel like I mentioned earlier that rewatching is very important because, you know, when you're just trying to get through a series for the sake of getting through it, not that I didn't appreciate everything that Star Trek was about, because I did. It was just, you know, I have to have seen everything about this, and I'm going to try to do it like as quick as possible. But you don't pick up on some of those things, some of those like those more nuanced things about Star Trek, which is what makes Star Trek so great. Mm-hmm. So I did think, though, for a while, you know, as I got older, I kept asking, you know, why isn't there any new Star Trek? And at that time, you know, it's hard to kind of piece together what, you know, in Hollywood, like what a production would cost. And, you know, I hadn't really had any of that background. So it was just kind of like, well, why isn't this happening? And so I know that this is something we'll probably might mention later, but that's why I was so excited when like the Kelvin film was announced, because my dad and I were at I don't remember what movie we were watching. We were at the theater and we saw the preview for it, the Star Trek 2009. Mm-hmm. And like we were both like freaking out in the theater when we saw it. Because at that time I wasn't really like involved in a ton of social media, so I didn't really have like, I wasn't being exposed to constant Star Trek news. So I kind of just like came upon Star Trek news when it happened, or if, you know, it was something quite mainstream. And so I did worry though for a while, you know, why isn't anything new coming out? And, but also there was certainly enough content to go back on. It wasn't like I had nothing else. There was already quite an established history of Star Trek. And so I had the opportunity to kind of go back and absorb that. And then after I was done with that, I was still left wanting more. I feel like I always want more Star Trek, no matter what. So I was excited when the Kelvin films were announced. And, you know, now with Discovery, I didn't know if we would see Star Trek again in syndication on television. Well, I mean, it's on CBS All Access or Netflix, and now Picard Show is going to be on Amazon. But I just didn't really know with the evolution of television what Star Trek would look like in, like, today's world. And that's when Discovery was announced. I took every and all opportunities to find out everything about Star Trek Discovery.
It was hard to keep me away from the news. Mm-hmm. Of that one, that's for sure. And hearing your recounting of seeing that first trailer, or teaser, we should say, for the 2009 film, takes me back to whatever movie I was watching in theater. I can't remember what it was, but to see all those close-in shots of people working on building something. What are they building? What is this? And then they pull out to that wide shot, and you see that it's the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And then inside, you just burst into flames of excitement. Yeah. Because you realize, holy cow, it's new Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder, why are they not releasing? Why is this not the movie I'm watching right now?
Exactly. You're like, oh, I want it right now. Why can't I have it right now?
So you have made mention of the Kelvin films, and we're going to talk more about those in a moment. But first, it seems that now is the proper time to jump into a little bit of Trek trivia in a segment that, thanks to Seth Walker from episode 2, we're going to try this out for a while. We're going to call the Read Alert. It's been a long road.
Haven't you got anything better to do?
Please do not address this unit in that manner.
Okay, this is the point where we're going to have a no stakes, no prize, there's no winner, no loser, trivia showdown between the two of us. Now, before we started recording, when I sent you the questions a couple days ago, you were given instructions to find some Star Trek trivia questions. You have them ready?
I do have them ready.
I have questions here ready for you, so we're going to determine who gets to go first by a virtual coin toss. So go ahead and take your pick, head or tails.
Tails.
Hey Siri. Heads or tails?
It's tails this time.
Oh!
So, you picked tails, right?
Mm-hmm, I did.
Oh, okay, so you are going to read your questions first to me, and then I will read the questions to you.
Okay, so I am notoriously not extremely great at trivia, so I tried not to make my trivia questions too hard, so you'll probably think that they're a piece of cake, so...
We'll see.
Okay, so my first question is, how many people were stated to be on the original NCC 1701? As like a crew complement.
Right.
And the number is different because there's a this is how many the Enterprise could house versus this is how many it does.
Right. And I remember first taking note of the capacity for the D, for the Galaxy class. I remember this one being a lot smaller. The best I'm going to be able to do is a rough approximation. But I want to say it was less than 300. So like in the 250 range is what's coming to my mind.
Okay, so I have, when going back to watch the original series, it's nice to kind of pick out, well, this is the first time they said it, right? So I actually have it down here that it's about 430, was around that amount of people. So you were close, yeah.
Kind of, sort of. I think what's more interesting than the answer to the question is the fact that you thought that all these questions were going to be too easy and a piece of cake. And here I am with the first question saying, why am I hosting a Star Trek show?
Oh. No, that's okay. I'm like notoriously bad at remembering very like specific trivia questions. But I've been to like trivia in which it's insane. Like some of these people are spouting out things that I would have never ever thought. But I also do believe that it was mentioned that in the cage that Captain Pike had, although Kirk had a crew of about 430, that Pike had a crew about half of that. I don't remember the actual episode reference, but I've been seeing that rotate around, so.
I think it was in the cage when he's talking with the doctor in his quarters, and he talks about how he's tired of being responsible for X number of lives. Now I'm starting to wonder if that was a little bit closer to my number.
It might have been, yeah. It might have been.
I'm tired of being responsible for 203 lives, and I'm tired of deciding which mission is too risky and which isn't, and who's going on the landing party and who doesn't, and who lives, and who dies.
But there are some people who might make the argument that the cage is not canon. So,
well, I still wouldn't be right because of the menagerie. Technically. Well,
the clips that they show in the menagerie.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
But the episode itself, not necessarily. That is a debate for another episode.
Whole nother conversation. But the next question I have for you, are we rotating or am I asking all my questions first?
Nope, all yours.
Okay, so the next question I have for you is a lot easier. What's the name of Gul Dukat's daughter?
Oh, that would be Tora Zial.
Yes. See? What are you talking about? You know this stuff.
Maybe I'm just bad with numbers.
That's okay. It's hard. I'm constantly surprised by the people that remember all of like the ship's registry numbers. I'm like, what? I like know it as one thing or the other thing. Okay, so I'll give this question because it's something that is very near and dear to me, and I'm sure you'll get it right away. But what character does Michelle Forbes play on Star Trek Next Generation?
Well, you're probably referring to Ensign Ro Laren, later known as Lieutenant Ro Laren.
Yes, I
would also very quickly go to, I can't remember her name.
The other guest, when she guest stars the one previous time.
Yes, when she was the daughter of David Ogdensteyer's Dr. Timmison.
Yes, yes, I
can't remember the name of that daughter. It's eluding me right now, but I know she played that character too.
Yes, I was referencing Ensign Ro, but I do know. I'm also blanking on the name, but I do know that she had guest starred previously, and because of her performance there, that's why they chose to bring her back as Ensign Ro. So I am quite salty that I've never had the chance to meet Michelle Forbes. She's not necessarily a... she goes to conventions occasionally, but not quite as often. And I know she's going to be at Destination Star Trek in Birmingham this year, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to be there. So that's definitely a bummer for me. Here's another question for you, and I hope this one we'll see because it's very relevant. But since I was talking about ships' registries, what is the registry number of the Discovery, the USS Discovery?
That's NCC 1031.
Look at you! Got it.
That one is an aberration. I don't have a lot of registry numbers memorized, but because I am... in my own way, a bit of a fan of the concept of Section 31, and I had my suspicions that Discovery was a Section 31 project early in the first season, I took particular note of the fact that their registry number included a 31.
Oh, okay. That's
why it stuck with me.
Okay. And then I have one more trivia question for you. This one is a little bit further back, but not necessarily referencing the original series. It's just a little bit more broad, but we'll see if you know it. So Gene Roddenberry was creating Star Trek, he actually was going to name the Enterprise something different than the Enterprise.
The USS Yorktown.
Oh, look at you. You got it. So you did very well.
80%, not bad.
Well, we'll see. I'm notoriously bad at trivia, so hopefully I can piece together some of what you ask me.
I'm thinking that you'll have not the hardest time. Because I am not always burdened with an abundance of prep time, also known as sometimes I'm lazy, I get the quizzes that I give to my guests from a website called funtrivia.com, which has lots of quizzes on a lot of subjects, including, I would say, a few hundred quizzes on various Star Trek subjects. And this one seems to focus on the introductory monologue from TOS and TNG. That's where most of these questions are coming from, and a few others that are not necessarily directly connected with that, but they're about the same skill level. I think you're going to have no problem. So, question number one. Which television series began each show with a voiceover, Space, The Final Frontier, These Are the Voyages of the Starship Enterprise? Was it TOS and TNG? Was it Enterprise? Was it all Trek series? Or was it Voyager?
It was TOS and TNG.
I kind of gave that one away in talking about the quiz, and I didn't think of that. So, oops.
I would have known it.
Whoopsie. Question number two. In the television series where this introduction was used, whose voice was heard explaining, quote, these are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise? Was it A, the ship's computer? B, the voiceover rotated between the main characters? C, the show's producer? Or D, the ship's captain?
The ship's captain.
That is correct. Question three. According to the opening voiceover in Star Trek, the original series, how long was the Enterprise's mission?
5 years.
5 years. I figured, why give the multiple choices? You're going to All right. So, according to the voiceover at the beginning of the Star Trek episodes, what was part of the Enterprise's mission? This one I have to give you the choices.
Okay.
A, to discover new planets. B, to improve humanity's understanding of the universe. C, explore the galaxy. Or D, to seek out new life and new civilizations.
D.
That is correct. Number five. The last line of the Star Trek introduction always says, to boldly go where no one has gone before. True or false?
I'm going to have to say false.
And that is correct.
Because I know TOS says no man. So I was like, exactly. No. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's a different series, but it's the same Star Trek introduction. But that is a change that was made, so it was not always that way.
Yes.
Number six. Which Star Trek series was not set on board a starship named Enterprise?
Well, Deep Space Nine and Voyager.
Exactly. Voyager is not on the list of multiple choice options. Deep Space Nine is. So
also Discovery, you win. Too.
Also, I suspect this quiz was written before Discovery was
produced. See. Okay.
Your other options were TOS, TNG, or TAS. So you got it.
Oh, okay.
Number seven, what was seen on the TV screen during the Star Trek introduction? Was it A, pictures of the main characters and the actors' names? B, Star Trek, and then the name of the episode? C, a rocket launch? Or D, stars, planets, and a starship?
D.
That is correct. Which of these characters never commanded a starship named Enterprise? Was it A, Captain Catherine Janeway? B, Commander Will Riker. C, Captain Christopher Pike. Or D, Captain Edward Jellicoe.
Janeway.
That's correct. They even got Jellicoe in there. Everyone's favorite Enterprise captain.
And then there's the I can't think of his name. There's that the captain that's only referenced in animated series who precedented Pike, and I can't think of his name.
Captain Robert April.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Anytime I think of previous captains, I always think of Data saying Captain Thomas Hallowell, who is the captain of the Enterprise in the episode Tapestry, where Picard ends up being a science officer instead of the captain.
Yes, yeah.
Number nine, were any of the televised adventures of the Starship Enterprise and her crew set on Earth?
Were any of the televised adventures? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
There are options, but we don't need to hear those. The answers? Yes.
Yes.
Sometimes they go back there.
Quite a number of times, yeah.
Yeah. It tries to say yes, but only in Star Trek Enterprise. That's a lie. We know.
That's not true.
Well, that was one of their red herrings. It is yes, the original series and Next Generation both included episodes where the Enterprise returned to Earth as part of her mission. Mm-hmm. And final question, number 10. Which Star Trek series ended with an episode entitled, entitled is the wrong use of that word in this sentence. My wife would have a problem with this. I'm going to fix it.
Ooh.
Which Which Star Trek series ended with an episode titled These Are the Voyages?
TNG. No, wait. Hold on. My brain is blanking right now. No, it's not. It is TNG. No, it's not. My brain. Why? It's too early. Why can't I think? No, it's Enterprise. I'm dumb. Sorry. I was, my brain was like, oh, well, Riker and Deanna are there, so it's TNG. And then I was like, no.
Ooh.
So, spoiler for anyone that hasn't seen that, but yes, it is Enterprise. Right. My brain just was like, it's too early, and so I'm going to, like, totally coordinate with that with TNG because we see characters from them in it.
Well, you pulled it out of the fire at the last minute for a 10 out of 10 score.
Ooh, well, see, you were very kind to me with your questions.
You did fine. You did fine. If we ever get you back on for a sequel, I will find a quiz that is rated as intermediate or tough.
Okay. Well, I always like sell myself short, and I'm always afraid that I'm like, I'm not going to know anything. But I feel like I do know a little bit more, and I have to give myself a little credit for that.
Exactly. Don't undersell yourself. Be proud. Take hold of your family.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
All right, that brings us to the end of the read alert. Back to questions.
Ooh.
Before the read alert, we were talking a little bit about the Kelvin movies, specifically the teaser that announced that the first one was coming. Now we have had a trilogy of Kelvin timeline movies, and I like to ask people what they thought of the Kelvin timeline films and discuss the break in tone as far as both the aesthetic and the story,
mm-hmm.
and how it diverged from any Star Trek that we'd seen before. It was a very different flavor of Trek. So basically, give us your take, your comparison, Kelvin versus Prime.
Oh, okay. So I actually am a fan of the Kelvin films. They definitely have shortfalls, and there's definitely, just like you mentioned, there's a definite break in tone and Star Trek story. But I am of the strong opinion that Star Trek evolves over time. So it's kind of like the idea in which when we are exposed to a new Star Trek series, it can sometimes be or the reactions to it can sometimes be very polarized because, you know, either it's different than it was before or it doesn't feel like it should feel. And I think I know that I am, like, very often kind of matched with, or it could be considered that my opinions about the Kelvin films are due to my age because I'm only 23 years old. So while I have seen Star Trek in entirety, I wasn't alive when it was originally, well, other than Enterprise and now Discovery. But I guess I was alive when Voyager was airing. But in the fact that I'm not a 60s Star Trek fan. So I feel like that is often used as many people are like, well, that's why you like the Kelvin films, because you're young. Mm-hmm. And that does kind of irk me, because I think that we all, just because we come to Star Trek at different times doesn't mean that our appreciation of it is any less or any more than anyone else. But it goes back to kind of when the first Star Trek 2009 came out, and obviously there were story arc elements that very much diverged from what we had known before. And I didn't necessarily see so much a problem with it. The reason is because I think that, especially with the expansion of, like, special effects and kind of making it a... Not that the other Star Trek films were not, like, motion picture blockbusters, because they were. But it was kind of a Star Trek for a new age really trying to revamp it to make it very marketable to people that weren't just Star Trek fans. And when I introduce a lot of my friends that are not Trek fans to Star Trek, I do pretty much start them out with the Kelvin films, because that's something that they can, I think it's easier for them to latch on to. And that's just my friends. That totally might change for someone else. Mm-hmm. But I think that they are not necessarily the reflection of Star Trek that we might, I don't know, associate with the other series. But I don't think necessarily that they deserved as much, like, kind of being harped on as they have. I think that I have a very special respect for J.J. Abrams, not just what he did with Star Trek, but what he's done with Star Wars and with other films. And while there were things, I'm trying to, like, find the best way to say this, in that there's definitely things that were like, I don't know about that, but there were also, especially in Star Trek Beyond, I felt like that was kind of a little bit more of a return to kind of the humor and pace that we had seen in the original series. Mm-hmm. Versus, okay, let's go with Into Darkness, right? Which is probably the most, I mean, I won't quote this, but I think it's the most talked about Kelvin film. Partly in the fact that it's essentially a interesting retelling of Wrath of Khan, or they say it's not a retelling of Wrath of Khan, but I mean, you got to take it at what it is, right?
It kind of sort of is.
Yeah.
We could try to be gracious and say it's an interesting retelling of Space Seed.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. If I were to take Into Darkness, apart from the fact that I had already experienced, you know, Wrath of Khan and Space Seed previously, I think that I would appreciate it more. I think it's a good film, but it's hard for Star Trek fans to watch because we're Star Trek fans. It's also hard, especially after Wrath of Khan is my favorite Star Trek film. So I struggled with it, but then in the sense of, like, okay, say Into Darkness is appealing to people who've never seen Star Trek before, I think that to most of my friends, Into Darkness is their favorite Kelvin film. So I think it really depends on what angle you're coming at it from. Mm-hmm. There's a way that we appreciate things as Star Trek fans in enveloping everything that's come before. And then there's also a way to appreciate it as just a moviegoer. And I think that's true for a lot of fandoms. But I also believe that, you know, really the angle in which we examine it in is also, you know, very subjective to toxicity in today's, you know, social media landscape.
Yeah. That is a topic that we're going to get to in a few questions, talking about the social media approach to current Trek. But as far as the Kelvin timeline, I am, even though I am nearly, you know, two decades older than you, I still view those films in a fairly similar way to you. They're fine films on their own, except in the ways in which they're not. And for me, the ways in which those films are deficient, in my opinion, is not always because of their approach to the source material. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of the fact that things are different in the Kelvin timeline, which would have not been at all affected by the creation of this new timeline. Yes, Spock went back in time, and his arrival created this alternate timeline known as the Kelvin timeline, but that would not, for example, change the nationality of Khan, Noonien, and Singh.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was obviously from India in the prime timeline, and now he's very, very British. Mm-hmm. That's not something that would be changed by an alternate timeline, but they did it that way. There's no explanation for it. We just kind of roll with it. It's not my biggest problem, but it's one of those little annoyances.
Yeah.
But yeah. most most of my problems with the Kelvin timeline come down to the writing. For example, Kirk, he's in sickbay, he's talking with Khan, and they're facing off against each other, and then without looking at him, Kirk says to Bones, "Bones, what are you doing with that tribble?" Well, gee, I wonder if that's going to come into play later on, perhaps. Mm-hmm. They absolutely announced, hey, this is how we're going to fix the end of the movie. So when, spoiler alert, when Kirk dies in the reactor chamber at the end of the movie, not for one second did I think, oh, they're going to kill the captain in the second movie. No, mm-hmm. because he was experimenting on a tribble, so we know he's going to come back to life.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's definitely... I won't, like you said, I won't discredit Benedict Cumberbatch's performance, his performance, because I think he's an incredible actor.
Right.
I'm a huge fan of Sherlock. And it's just some of, like you said, some of the way it was just kind of approached was a little bit different. And I know that there's been interviews in which they say, well, it wasn't really meant to be a retelling of Wrath of Khan, so you can't approach it that way. And then I'm like, yeah, but it kind of is at the same time. So it's hard to kind of pay homage to a film that already exists in, you know, kind of changing those small things where, you know, it doesn't like burn the house down, but it's like, you know, this I feel like could have been approached in a different way.
They have their issues. They have their blemishes. They have their high moments too, like with the return to a tone and pace of Star Trek Beyond, which I almost entirely credit to having a huge Star Trek fan in Simon Pegg writing mm-hmm. that movie.
Yeah, it was definitely noticeable.
For him to sneak in, you know, right near the end of the movie, direct references to the series Enterprise.
Admiral Archer's Beagle.
well, that was in the first one.
That was the first one.
And Simon Pegg didn't write that. In Star Trek Beyond, Idris Elba's character of Krall,
mm-hmm.
I can't remember his human name at the moment. It's escaping me. But as he is speaking, not as an alien, but as a former Starfleet captain, and he makes direct reference to the war with the Zindi.
We lost ourselves, but gained a purpose. A means to bring the galaxy back to the struggle that made humanity strong.
I think you underestimate humanity.
I fought for humanity! Lost millions! To the Zinti and Romulan wars, and for what? For the Federation to sit me in a captain's chair and break bread with the enemy.
So to hear him drop an exclusively Star Trek Enterprise reference near the end of that movie, I squeed in my seat. I went, and I clapped my hands together, and my wife looks at me and says, "What?" I said, "You haven't seen it. You haven't watched that series yet. Just hang tight. You'll get there."
Oh, that was like me when I'm trying really hard not to spoil this for anyone who hasn't seen the second season of Discovery, but there's things that happen in the second season of Discovery with Captain Pike where there are huge references back to the cage and the menagerie. And
oh, yeah.
I watched Discovery with two friends, and I was freaking out, and they were looking at me like I was crazy.
The scene to which I assume that you were referring to, the only word that I could use to describe it as he's looking down the hallway, harrowing, was that visual of him looking at what he saw at the end of the hallway and then getting closer and, oh my God, scary.
It just totally blew my mind.
Even
crazy.
Even for all of us who knew it was coming, who knew what it meant, it was not a surprise to us at all. Still, just bone chilling to see that shot that they gave us.
And my husband was like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Oh, this is crazy."
So that is an example of a wonderful reference to pre-existing canon while they're making a prequel, or some might consider a midquel if we're talking about Pike's story.
Yeah.
They handled canon incredibly well in that series. Now with the Kelvin timeline, there are a lot of people who still maintain that it is not canon, not in any way canon, and then there are the even sillier people who think that Star Trek Discovery is a part of the Kelvin timeline, and thus that is not canon. There's a lot of talk about canon these days. Well, we're going to talk about some of that more in our next question about social media. But first, I wanted to get just a quick hit from you on what is legitimately considered non-canon. This would be like the Star Trek books and comic books and video games like Star Trek Online. I know that we both play. Things that you find them on memory beta rather than memory alpha because they have not been in a TV show or a movie, so they're not canon, but they still exist. And I'm curious of your take on the non-canon material, like the books and the comics. And how do you think they shape up against the canon stuff? We've been doing a great job of keeping everything, all of our discussions so far, just about the canon stuff. So we don't have to go too much into detail, but just a quick hit on your thoughts of non-canon versus canon.
Yeah, I think the canon argument has been warped incredibly, especially with Discovery being released, but... in regards to like non-canon material, I have read a few Star Trek novels, but I'm not extremely familiar with them. That's another like I just have like this list of all the Star Trek stuff I need to do, and that's like on the top of my list because there's so much content there as well, and just exposition of characters that we feel like we want in the show. And then I always, I'm like, oh, well, I wish we would have seen more of this. And then someone's like, well, it's in this book if you read it. And I'm like, okay, adding that to my list right now.
If you think it would be helpful, I have found somewhere online a wonderful visual tree that gives various timelines for various different books. And with a big focus on books that take place after all of the Prime series that we've seen. So, like, the Further Adventures of the Enterprise E, the Further Adventures of Deep Space Nine, and a lot of these books, it becomes not just following a series, but, like, all the characters from Trek, of all the different series. They're crossing over with each other, and it's just a general Star Trek adventure in a book, not a Deep Space Nine adventure or a TNG adventure. And it visually breaks down and lists all the books. You want to read them in this order, then you want to stop here and jump over to this miniseries and read these couple, and then come back here and read these for the rest. If you are going to try to make a solid push to go through a lot of Star Trek novels, I can find that timeline and send it on to you. I have a copy saved somewhere, and I have many of the books that are part of it, so I can use that when I try to go through them. And if that's something, if that's something you want, I'll send it along.
Please do. Please do. I constantly hear about internet kind of discussion forum, Trek Book Club. They discuss a Star Trek book every month. And I've been wanting to get in on that for a really long time. But I also want to be able to, you know, have a little bit more of a background of this is where I should start. And this is kind of where it happens. So definitely, please send that over. I will utilize it.
Will do.
But... like you said, I do play Star Trek Online. I play it on PS4, and I've been meaning to play it on PC, but that's like a whole nother monster of its own. Not a bad monster, a good one. But I do really enjoy the efforts made by the people who create Star Trek Online and story artists and you know, producers and stuff. But I will say that, you know, Star Trek Online definitely has a different tone than the Star Trek we see. There aren't very many diplomatic missions, which is something... Those are sometimes my favorite Star Trek episodes. It's hard, though, to really develop a game around that because you also have to, you know, you want space battles and you want, you know, ground battles and stuff. Right. And it's hard to... kind of mesh the two together with Star Trek, because Star Trek has always been about, you know, we'll fight with if we have to, but it's a last resort, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't mind the gameplay as much as like, okay, like I love the RPG portion of it and being able to create your own character and being able to kind of explore that character. And there are a lot of space battles and ground battles, though. But that's, I mean, that's okay. I kind of take it at what it is. So I'll go with that.
Right.
But in my, in other canon, I've been kind of weaving in and out of comic books lately. So I've read a little bit of Star Trek versus Transformers, which is a fun one if you haven't read that. It really kind of is a wild ride. It's interesting. And if you like Star Trek or Transformers, I definitely recommend it. I've done a little bit with Star Trek Waypoint. IDW just released Star Trek Year 5, which is some more, you know, Enterprise missions. And haven't had a chance to catch up on that. They're also doing Q Conflict. Just a lot of really, they're really pushing out Star Trek content. And there's also, it was announced that there's going to be another, there was last year a comic that was Star Trek Discovery Succession, I believe is the title of it. And they, IDW has announced that they're doing another Discovery series. I haven't really looked too much into it, but I'm excited. It's just, it is nice to be able to supplement the Star Trek watching that we have with kind of all these other elements where we get a little bit more in-depth of a look at things we wish, I mean, we wish we see things on the screen, but you can't have everything, you know?
Right. Well, we will absolutely take what we can get. And even if that means we have to hold a story in our head until the point we see something on screen that contradicts it, then we're going to have to let that go. You know, for example, I've taken in most of the story that Star Trek Online has to offer. And I can sort of factor that in saying, okay, so this character that I'm watching in this DS9 rewatch right now, this is where they're eventually going to end up. Or actually, no, you know, right now I'm doing a Voyager rewatch, so we'll use that. Any episode that I watch, I see Ensign Kim walking around and say, oh, he's going to be a captain someday.
Yeah.
I did a mission with him, and I was an admiral, so I outranked him.
but poor Harry.
If anything happens in, like, say, if the Picard series comes out and there's any reference to, you know, Lieutenant Commander Kim at the time of his death, it's like, well, he's not a captain anymore. You're going to have to overwrite that. But it's okay, because that's the sort of thing that we undertake when we choose to hold and balance canon and non-canon material at the same time. One has to take priority, and this is just, you know, that's what we choose to live with when we're fans of franchises like this.
Exactly.
So, speaking of Discovery, this is the big one. Before we get to our final wrap-up question, this is something that has troubled me for quite some time, and I'm sure it's troubled you as well. There is a growing segment of the Star Trek fandom in social media that is increasingly and blisteringly toxic in regards, most specifically, to Star Trek Discovery. They refuse to believe that it is canon. Some of them refuse to believe that it is even Star Trek. This is one of the most polarizing events that I've ever seen regarding the fandom of Star Trek. There's no real specific question here other than, what are your thoughts?
All right. I feel like I could go on about this all day. So we'll see how much, how long you let me talk before you cut me off. So I, as a member of the Star Trek online community, this is something that I see on the daily, and it is disheartening. But I also think it's important. I make a very important distinction between people that are not fans of Discovery, but respectfully, you know, express that they're not fans and because of X or X reasons, and interact very respectfully with other people on social media, because those people exist. I know that a lot of people are like, well, you know, all of the Discovery haters are just automatically trolls, and that's not true. I can prove it if you want me to. Not that anyone would ever ask me to, but they exist. And there's also, though, like you said, some very toxic people on social media that are literally just out to hurt others because of their opinion. And that grinds my gears, because if you have a problem with Discovery, make the problem about the show, not about the person, because everyone is entitled to their own opinions. We all have our favorite Star Trek shows, and we all have our Star Trek shows that we don't really like that much either. It's ice cream flavors or potato chip flavors. It's just the way it goes. But to very viscerally attack people on social media and just abiding by that, well, I have that anonymity of being behind a screen. I don't Like, I can say whatever I want because it doesn't matter. That's not true. There is another person on the other end of that interaction. And, I mean, I guess unless you're interacting with a bot, but it's real. It's basic discourse. Like, why would you say something like that on social media if you would never say it to someone's face? Some of the stuff that I come across is just ridiculous. Have we completely, like, is the Star Trek idea just of naught now? Like, will we ever reach that awesome, diverse and moral society that we all wish for? And it just is, it is really disheartening. And for both sides, really, because there are people that are getting called out because the Discovery is not their favorite, and they've posted some constructive criticism about it, which is certainly warranted. And then there's also people that are very much fans of Discovery and are getting, you know, very huge attacks at them because of their opinions. Mm-hmm. I think that social media is designed to be a space where we talk about opinions. And I think that if we all thought the same thing, it would be a pretty boring place. That's what, I mean, the idea is to be able to have constructive discussion and to be able to, you know, have be in a situation where you can have a debate in a way that, you know, your character doesn't come into question, and the way that you're expressing your opinions are respectful. And I don't think that that's hard. Maybe that's just me. I don't think that's a hard thing to achieve. I think that we could all, you know, we can all be a little bit kinder. We can all be a little bit more accepting of diverse opinions. It is hard, though, you know, when you post about, you know, I loved this episode or I loved this Discovery or whatever. And, you know, it is kind of like, well, someone posts on it. There's a difference. I'm going to explain the difference between the two types of reactions. So say I posted something about, we were talking about the scene where Pike is in the hallway.
Yes.
And he sees his imminent future. And so say I posted something on any social media platform about how meaningful that was to me and how great that they were tying back to, you know, the menagerie in the cage and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So say I posted that, and then there's two types of comments, and I've had very much to these two types of comments. I've had, oh, well, I actually think that this, I view it this way. So someone would say, hey, I think that maybe it wasn't a good tie back, but the reason I think that is because of X reason, and then whatever you want to fill in that blank with. And I don't have a problem with those comments because that's someone expressing, you know, well, that's cool that you think that, but this is where I'm coming from. Everyone experiences Star Trek in different ways, so we can't all expect to be on the same wavelength. And then the other type of comment, which I don't really tolerate in any situation, is, I can't believe you like Star Trek Discovery. There's no way you are a Star Trek fan if you like Star Trek Discovery. Star Trek Discovery is, you know, it's for social justice warriors and, like, any other. I could spew off all these things.
Yeah.
I could do this all day. And I've seen things, and I agree with, you know, well, some people like that. Those, like, trolls that are literally just out to attack you. Because there are people in this world that do that for enjoyment, and that is a sad fact. But those people, I've heard, you know, well, don't engage them, because then that gives them a voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I am also very much of the opinion, too, where, like, if someone's going to attack me in that regard, or, like, spew out those things where I'm at the point where, like, I don't feel, I've gotten enough of it where I don't really feel personally attacked anymore. I'm just kind of like, well, you know, they're just being that way because they are.
Right.
And so I do oftentimes, if I feel comfortable enough, I will respond. But I don't respond, if you throw back, I'm of the opinion that if you throw back, you know, well, you're dumb because you don't like Star Trek Discovery and, you know, you're, you know, a conservative hater, blah, blah, blah. I feel like if you throw back that stuff, it makes you just as bad as them.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. I mean, to anyone else, their own. But I think that, you know, that just shows that they got to you at that point. And by throwing that stuff back, it makes you just as much of, you know, you're throwing back the same shade that they gave to you. Right. So I always respond with, like, I feel that you're personal, like, you're totally entitled to your opinion about Star Trek Discovery, but this is what I feel, and I respectfully express that. And if you don't like my content, then you're free to unfollow me. Like, that's kind of what I go with at this point.
Yeah.
So it's just it can be a really tough landscape to navigate, because, you know, social media is everywhere and everyone all over the world. I just think that we can all be a little bit kinder and all be a little bit more accepting of the opinions that we express and receive. And then also, like, totally block and mute those crazy people.
Right. and wait until after we block them to call them crazy. I have found that I cannot be the only one of this opinion. And that is, the quickest way to get under the skin of a Star Trek fan, especially a stalwart, stout Star Trek fan, like me, like you, like my previous guests, like my future guests, is for someone to say to us, you are not a Star Trek fan. And yeah. That has happened to me before on Twitter, where I have expressed my opinion. And I don't even think it was necessarily my opinion on Discovery. It was my opinion of someone who was slapping around a Discovery fan, saying, you know, you should do your research and do this and this and this. And I respond to them by saying, maybe while they're doing your research, you can research how to be, you know, essentially how to be a good person and how not to be, how not to be a gatekeeper, how not to be rude and oppressive with your opinions.
Mm-hmm.
The most activity I've ever gotten on any Twitter post that I've ever made. Never gotten so many likes, never gotten so many clicks and views and interactions. But it led to a few other smaller tangent discussions about Discovery. And in one of them, one of the, I would say, more well-known Discovery-hating Twitter accounts, not the Doom one, but of that ilk, one of them saying, well, the thing is, you're clearly just not a Star Trek fan because this and this and this. And if I could have choked out my phone, I would have done so, because that is one of the most infuriating things that's ever been said to me.
Yeah, there should never be any question of, like, I've talked about this many times on social media, that if there's no hierarchy to fandom, there's no requirements other than the fact that you like Star Trek. That's it. There's nothing else. It doesn't matter how many episodes you've seen. It doesn't matter how old you are. I get that a lot. I get, you know, you're 23. You can't appreciate Star Trek. That's actually, I talked about this in a previous podcast. Coming out of the Deep Space Nine documentary, I had a man that was at the screening that approached me and said, you know, can you really appreciate Star Trek Deep Space Nine at your age? And it was really hard to walk away from that conversation. But, you know, I politely said, you know, I grew up with Star Trek, and I have a great respect for it. And it's definitely a big part of my life. And that's what I left it at. Because some people just don't, they feel like they own Star Trek. And then by that, they have the right to govern everyone else that likes that thing.
Yeah. My Star Trek fandom, my knowledge of Star Trek, sometimes I would call it my mastery of TNG trivia, because that's my strongest suit is TNG, because I've seen that the most. Like mm-hmm. I said, VHS collection of TNG, just watch them over and over and over again. Many episodes I can just quote along with it, because I know it so well. I hear the dialogue like music. And that's the second time I've called dialogue music in this podcast. I need to find a new phrase.
No, I like it.
But to be that secure in my knowledge of and my familiarity with a particular series, that being TNG, it's something that I can hold on to. There can be so many other things going wrong in my life. I know mm-hmm. that I'm good at Star Trek, and I always have that. I understand that it might sound silly on the surface, but to look at a statement like that and to put yourself inside that statement, what must it feel like to be able to say that? And I think it's more relatable to other Star Trek fans to say, you know what, I get it. Star Trek can be if you are a fan, if you know it, if you hold it close, and if it's that familiar to you, Star Trek can serve as a rock whenever you need it.
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you the amount of times I've heard stories of, you know, Star Trek saved my life in a moment where I needed it, or the story that I watched was just particularly resonated with me at that moment in my life. And just to think that people feel the need to control that. Why can't everyone just like what they like and everyone just be like, okay, it is that way, and just let it be? Because we all appreciate different things, and we all come from different backgrounds. We're all from different places. We've all watched Star Trek at different times. There's no king, or there's no ruler in which, well, it has to be this way because I said so.
Exactly. There is no good way to be superior as a Star Trek fan. Now, with what I described as being so familiar with TNG that I can hold on to that, and that helps me when I need it, there are two directions that I could take that. There's the direction that I always try to take it, which is, this is so important to me, I know it better than most other things in my life, and I want to share with other people who feel the same way, and we can take, when we need it, we can be entertained by Star Trek together. We can debate and discuss and reflect on philosophy and sociology and culture with each other through Star Trek, or we can support each other and draw strength from this shared experience of Star Trek. The other direction you can go, and this is, I will say, this is the wrong direction, a bad direction to go, which is to hold on to that fandom, not share it with other people, but to hold it close. And anytime you see someone who feels similarly about Star Trek, you have to find a way to prove that your familiarity and your fandom is stronger and better. You have to be the biggest Star Trek fan in the room. No one else knows Star Trek like I do, because I need to be the best at something, and Star Trek is it. And anyone else who is good at Star Trek in the way that I describe being good at it is a is a threat. They can't be better than me, because I need to hold on to this as, this is what I'm best at. No one else can be better at it. And I think that's where a lot of this toxicity in Star Trek social media comes from, is needing to be the biggest Star Trek fan in the room. And the only way to prove that is to knock other people down, and that doesn't help anybody.
I was just gonna, you took the words right out of my mouth. I just feel that, you know, if that's what your goal is as a Star Trek fan, you know, why do you so much like resonate with what Star Trek has? Because that, like, everything that Star Trek says constantly, like, totally is the opposite, polar opposite of people acting like that.
Right.
So it just makes me, you know, it's not, I mean, we're not at a talent show here. Like, the point of Star Trek is to be able to, like, band together and be better people. So why does someone feel the need to top that over other people? I don't get it.
As with many of the questions that we've discussed today, and even the I think 5 or 6 questions that I have excised from the list for the sake of time, all questions that could spawn their own separate episode just to address this one question. You are remarkable at podcasting, and as a guest, it's hard to ask for better. Sorry, Seth, I think you might have just been beaten. Uh-oh. That's superiority.
Oh, no.
So moving into our final question, and I see how long we've been going, so we'll do just a quick 5-minute hit to give us this wrap up. Pick one Star Trek philosophy that you have taken from the franchise and tell us how, using that philosophy or that social viewpoint, how has Star Trek made your life better?
So I feel like this is definitely a common one, but I'll probably go with infinite diversity and infinite combinations. And the meaning that I feel like Idik, which is the term I guess a lot of people call it.
We covered this last episode. We're good.
Oh, okay. You're like, everyone knows. We're good. But I feel like I have a little bit different of an Idik story than a lot of other people. And I feel like just knowing that all of those different, you know, different people, different places, different ideals, different demographics, I mean, extensive different demographics, but that, you know, all of those things about a person are important and that they're valued. And I feel like so much in today's, you know, landscape, we can not necessarily forget that, but it's hard to see that into. We say, you know, are we ever going to reach that Star Trek world that we so much desire? And I think that, you know, growing up, I was very like, I liked doing a lot of different things. I was very creative, but then I also, you know, I always was, what's the right thing to do? I feel like that was something that was very, like, it very much occupied my mind. And I feel like for a while I wanted to do what everyone else wanted me, or I wanted to be what everyone else wanted me to be and not what I, or not who I was. And that's hard when you're young because, I mean, you're kind of figuring out who you are as a person, your personality traits, and those things change over time as well because of, you know, experiences that you have and moments that are important to you. So I just think that my Idik story was that, you know, whatever and whoever I decide to be, and that I'm still figuring out. I'm 23 years old, and I'm sure that I still will be figuring out until I die. But that just let me know that whoever that is okay. And that made me also appreciate so many other people in, you know, embracing those different ideals and different opinions. I've always very much thrived on conversations with people that, you know, we see things differently, or we're very different people and we're talking about, you know, this is how I experienced this, or this is how I experienced this. So, like, for example, my husband is biracial, so I very much love talking with him about how he experiences certain situations. And it's sad sometimes where he said, you know, this is probably what you view this situation as, you know, as a white woman. And then this is how I feel about it. And I just think being able to see those different viewpoints and to value them and to acknowledge that they exist is so important for society, because it is hard because we're not in that other person's shoes, right? We are ourselves. We experience stuff as a person. But to be able to at least sympathize with someone else and to be able to listen and understand what they're going, well, not necessarily understand. I think that's important to say, you know, it's hard because you say, well, I know what you're feeling. Because I feel like that's something I hear a lot. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like a common term. Like, yeah, I know how you feel, or I know what you mean. And it's hard because, do you really? Because everyone, like I said, everyone handles things in different ways. But I think, especially with Idik, it's always important to acknowledge those, the way you feel, or the way you view something, or who you are as a person is probably drastically different from, you know, the person you run into at the grocery store or your checkout person at the grocery store. But that's not, like, that's not something that devalues you. That's something that actually makes us stronger. Our diversity helps teach us more about each other and more about other, you know, social and cultural differences. And that's something that I, you know, it's hard to see in today's world, but I feel like when we embrace that, we will all be better people in a better society. So that's my Idik story, I guess.
I am so glad that you came on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been, I really take any opportunity to, I feel like the more I podcast, the more I get better at kind of compiling my thoughts. Because on Twitter, you know, you can sit on a tweet as long as you want until you post it. But when you're actually chatting with someone else, I feel like sometimes that my mouth moves faster than my brain, but I've gotten a little bit better at trying to articulate what I'm really feeling.
It's the organic nature of a discussion on a podcast that makes it interesting and exciting. Because there's always going to be that aspect that you don't know exactly where it's going to go. Not just because you don't always know what the other person is going to say, but because you don't always know what you're going to say.
Exactly.
And that's why I find that I'm enjoying doing this show more than I enjoy interacting on Twitter, because it's live, it's real time. Every aspect of the discussion grows based on the moment that came before.
Yes. Yeah. And it really is like, it's a living, breathing thing almost.
Exactly. And as evidenced by the fact that this is the longest episode of the Prime Direction that I've done, I think perhaps that the previous host has done as well. That speaks to the fact that you say you think you're getting better at podcasting. The fact that this far into the recording session and I don't feel like we've slowed down at all, and there's still so much left that we could dive into with just as much energy and depth. You're better at this than you think you are. You're better at this than you give yourself credit for, I should say. So,
well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. Thank you very much.
So once we find a decent discussion episode of the Cosmic Potato Star Trek after show called The Landing Party, then we will be reaching out. We need to get you in that party.
Well, I'd love to be in it.
At this time, I'm going to turn the floor over to you one last time to tell everyone once again where they can find you out in the vast reaches of the internet. Give your pitches, your plugs, your promotions. Go.
All right. So I am the 23-year-old Trekkie, and I can be found primarily on Twitter. My handle is at ttrekkie, but I can also be found by that same handle on Instagram. And if you also type that into the Facebook search bar, you can find my Facebook page. And I also have a YouTube channel. You can type in 23-year-old Trekkie. You can find that there. There's not too much on the channel yet, but more things are coming. I recently started working on a web series called Newbies, a watch party web series, where we expose people to shows they've never seen before and get their reactions on it. And then also I do a little bit of a strange type of talk show on Tuesdays called Towel Talk Tuesdays, where I just give my little bit, 2 minutes of unfiltered thoughts of what's meaningful to me that week. So if you like watching some interesting talk show stuff, definitely check that out. I do some podcasts with the Tricorder Transmissions Network. And then also I am currently working on a new podcast venture with my dear friend, Shashank Avaru, who can be found at @_hero on Twitter. And it's called Who is Trek? And I'm not going to give too much away other than that. But something we're both very excited about and excited about sharing with all of you. So that's my plug.
Well, I am instantly excited to have that shared with me. I'm going to be keeping my eyes open for that. And everyone that's out there, I will say, it may sound silly, but Towel Talk Tuesday is awesome.
Thank you.
That is going to bring us to the end of episode 3 of The Prime Direction. I want to thank once again Ali Martinez for joining me in the wardroom. I will spend the next who knows how many weeks trying to edit this massive episode into something that can be released, and it will hit all of your major podcatchers in due course. Once you listen to this one, if this is your first episode, step back in time a little bit. My first episode was with the previous host of this podcast, Mr. Sean Ray, the head of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. My second episode was with another good Twitter friend of mine and solid Star Trek fan, Seth Walker, at Verse Trek on Twitter. And before that, we have many episodes that were hosted by Sean Ray, including an episode where he interviewed me. That was episode 3. Now you know which one to avoid. But we also have we also have interviews with the head of the Infinite Diversity Podcast Network, as long as some people that you may have heard of, for example, Vic Mignogna of Star Trek Continues, Michelle Specht of Star Trek Continues. I cannot remember the name of the guest, but we have an episode talking with DeForest Kelly's dear lifelong friend and biographer, as well as an episode interviewing New York Times best-selling Star Trek author Michael Jan Friedman, along with a whole bunch of other people. So you can find all of those listed under the Prime Direction. Same place you're finding this episode. Go back, you can find those others as well. If you have any trouble, visit cosmicpotato.com to find all of our old episodes. We got more credits coming up after the close, during the wonderful closing music. I love that music that I have. You haven't heard it yet, Allie, but go back and listen to this episode and you will. It's good. Right. Good music. So check out those credits. And until next time, join us again where we have another mystery guest coming into the wardroom to share with us their Prime Direction. Thank you for joining us here on the Prime Direction. Connect with our show on our Facebook page, on Twitter at Prime Direct Pod, or by email to primedirectpod@cosmicpotato.com. We're always on the watch for future guests. The Prime Direction is a proud member of the Cosmic Potato Podcast Network. Visit cosmicpotato.com for more fine podcasts. Our logos, banners, and other artwork is provided by Planet Rise Creative. Visit planetrisecreative.com or find them on Twitter at Planet Rise for more. Their graphic and visual art services are available for hire. Our music is provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. This show is produced, edited, and hosted by Scott Madison. Thank you for listening.